Hello everyone, welcome back. My name is Taylor Andrews. This is Lights Up with Taylor Andrews. So today I wanted to talk about three different shows. Teeth the Musical, John Proctor is the villain, and All Nighter. And there is a connection point that I'm going to get into in a minute where all of these plays have certain plot elements that kind of interconnect with one another. But also, even though Teeth isn't considered part of this, I consider it kind of part of it, where there's kind of this new wave of theater trying to engage with and draw in Gen Z and the younger generation and get them involved with and interested in live performance and theater. So I really love that. So just so you guys know, not only are there spoilers ahead for all of the shows, because I am planning to give a short synopsis on what they're all about, but trigger warning, all three of these shows do deal with talk about one show's kind of a scene of sexual assault. Two kind of show a scene of sexual assault. And so that is something that triggers you, like, take care of yourself, you come first. So yeah, let's get into it. Okie dokie, so the first show we're going to be talking about is Teeth the Musical, which I saw back in December. It was the last show I saw before going home for Christmas break. I was lucky enough to sit in the splash zone, which was such a fascinating thing. Like, what do you mean you can sit front 2 to 3 rows of the show and get fake blood thrown all over you during it? That is such a cool thing. I'm really, really mad that Teeth is closed already, because I already loved the music before seeing it, but after seeing that musical, it has become my favorite musical. Like, I am obsessed with it. Why is it closed already? I would go back a million times. Which is actually true of all three of the shows I'm about to talk about, but Teeth, I feel like, does not get enough love because she was phenomenal. So anyway, Teeth follows this girl, Dawn O'Keefe, who is the stepdaughter of the pastor at her church. Her stepbrother and her don't really get along because there was this incident that happened with them when they were younger. Dawn is head of the Promise Keeper Girls, or PKG, which is this group of girls that pretty much practice, like, abstinence and take a vow of purity, and it's like this little religion group. And so Dawn has been dating her longtime boyfriend, Toby, and there's this really, it's such an uncomfortable scene to watch, but pretty much Toby at one point kind of forces himself onto Dawn and tries to get her to have sex with him, even though she is not ready for it. And in that moment, she discovers that her vagina has teeth because it bites off his penis. And so this show is so phenomenal because even though there's this supernatural element to it that also leads to some of this raunchy comedy, at its core, it's about this girl dealing, A, with, like, religious trauma and this idea of religion and sexuality and how those go in hand, but also just how a girl processes and deals with being sexually assaulted. Because there's a scene after this where that happens, where Dawn tries to talk to PKG about it, and they pretty much tell her it's her fault, like, she gets slut-shamed by them. And so, you find out towards the end of the show that the teeth in Dawn's vagina are actually this entity named Dentata, and Dentata kind of spreads to the rest of the Promise Keeper girls, and it's this really bloody, gory ending where Dentata's just kind of taking over the world and killing as many men as she can through sex. And I love that as a plot point because sex is power. And there are other shows that we're going to talk about. John Proctor's The Villain states that in its show. Sex is also power. And so it is so cool seeing Dawn kind of take that power back at the end, even though it's through, like, this entity, Dentata, that's kind of possessing her. It's about kind of her power was taken from her, and by the end, this power is being taken back. And so I think that's just such a cool message of the show, that all of this confusion and this rage and this anger of being mistreated can be taken and filtered into your own power, and that coping through it helps you find your power again. So even though it's this absurd show with these supernatural elements, and that, like, yes, Dentata is seen as a villain because she's genociding the male race, there is this very large theme of power and where you find power and how you use the power that you find, and finding power through others and solidarity. And so I just think Teeth is such a phenomenal show. I think the special effects were incredible. I think the comedy was on point. I think it did such a good job of balancing these somber, heart-crushing moments and these hilarious gags that you would never even think of seeing in an off-Broadway show. So go listen to the cast recording if you haven't. The music's amazing. The actors and actresses in it are amazing. And I want them to release sheet music soon because I want to work on music from the show. So that's my full vibes about Teeth. Let's move on to the next one. So the next show I wanted to talk about was John Proctor as the villain. With these two next two shows specifically, I quite literally saw them this weekend. I'm recording this on a Monday. It'll be longer since I've seen them by the time this sees the light of day, definitely. But I saw John Proctor Saturday night, so I saw that 2 nights ago, and I saw All-Nighter Sunday during the day at matinee, so I saw that yesterday. So these two are definitely a little fresher in my mind, and my thoughts are A, fresher, but B, probably a little more unorganized, so bear with me. John Proctor is the villain, in my opinion, is a piece of theater that everybody needs to see. Everybody. Teenagers especially. A younger audience probably should definitely wait, but I think, especially teen girls, but all teenagers, all adults, everyone should see this show because it is that important and that impactful. So, John Proctor is the Villain follows this junior honors lit class reading The Crucible. So, our main character, Shelby, played brilliantly by Sadie Sink, might I say, has been MIA for about 6 months. So, she shows back up at the school. And it's this big deal because she slept with her best friend's boyfriend before she left. But she shows back up. She's very, like, quirky and anxious and, like, yeah, there's, like, an energy that, like, you kind of quite don't pin down what it is for a while. And so while this is going on, the other four girls in the show are wanting to start a feminism club, and they kind of get told that it's like bad timing for that because the show takes place in 2018, so this is when Me Too really starts picking up, and a lot more victims of sexual assault were like speaking out, encouraged by Me Too to speak out and tell their truth about what happened. And so Ivy, one of the characters, gets cold feet about the feminism club because her dad's secretary speaks out and is like, hey, he sexually assaulted me. And Ivy's like, my dad's my favorite person in the world. Like, I just don't know that, like, I believe this. Maybe we shouldn't be doing this right now. And so Shelby kind of reconnects with her best friend. They get paired together for a project, an interpretive project on the Crucible. And they're talking about the Crucible one day, and Shelby is like, I think Abigail Williams was awesome. I think John Proctor is the bad guy. For those of you who don't know the plot of The Crucible, it takes place during the Salem witch trials. This young girl, Abigail, who actually was a lot younger when this actually historically happened. However, she's aged up to be about a teenager for The Crucible. She's a maid for this family, the Proctors, and John Proctor, who was married to Elizabeth, like hooks up with Abigail, and they're having sex and they're having this affair. And then he kind of turns around when she's like, I'm in love with you, and fires her and denies it ever happened. And it's like low-key, like, being a douchebag about it. So, John Proctor is kind of painted as like this hero, especially during the literature class. And Shelby is like, no, he was a bad guy. He put this girl through hell. She channeled that power and burned down this whole town with her rage. And the teacher's like, okay, Shelby, that's enough. And she's like, why can't I speak about this? And so it kind of like gets this heated moment, and it gets revealed that 6 months ago before she left, Shelby and the English teacher, Mr. Smith, had been hooking up together. And that's why she ended up leaving and why she's been like so off since she's gotten back. And so I love it because it really is so realistic with the portrayal of what happens when allegations like these happen in your own neighborhood. Because the school board doesn't believe Shelby. Mr. Smith gets reinstated. Ivy doesn't want to believe Shelby because her dad's going through the same thing right now, and she feels like if she believes Shelby, she has to believe that her dad is a bad guy too. Beth, one of the other girls in the class, doesn't want to believe it because she's very close with Mr. Smith. And there's a phrase that kind of comes back one a few times through the play that's really brilliant writing by Kimberly Bellflower. Kimberly Bellflower is a genius for writing this show, not only the way she wrote it, but just in general for writing it. There's this phrase that keeps coming back of, I know him, like, I wouldn't do this, like, he wouldn't do this. Like, I know this person. Because it really is this shocking thing of, like, people who are in positions of authority and in the public eye often get away with this more because people are like, no, I know this person, like, I see them at church, or like, I see them in this magazine, etc., etc., which makes it harder for a lot of victims to speak out. And so we get to this presentation at the end, and it was really, really amazing too, because a lot of the plot, there's a part earlier where Beth is reading The Great Gatsby and is trying to connect the song Green Light by Lorde to it. And there's these different interpretations, but then at the end, Shelby and her best friend set their project. They do an interpretive dance to the song Green Light. And it's this really beautiful moment. The guidance counselor has to, like, sit in on his Mr. Smith's classes for the rest of the year because this allegation happened. And there's a beautiful moment with that, too, because the guidance counselor, Mrs. Gallagher, is talking to him because they talked earlier. She's younger than him, but her brother was friends with him in high school, and so she knew of him this whole time. And they have this really deep conversation because she's like, you know, I heard about your reputation in college and these girls that said, like, you did these things to them, but I never believed them because I knew you, my brother knew you, like, you'd been in my house, you'd been over, like, I knew you. And I'm so upset I didn't believe them because now this is happening again. Because I didn't believe those girls. Like, maybe I could have done something about it. So it's this really important, deep moment because she also kind of takes ownership of that. But it's just, like, this stunning scene. And then we get to the presentation and they're dancing to Green Light. And the teacher gets up and tries to stop them at one point because obviously he knows this is targeted directly at him. And one of the girls in the class, Nell, who she was from Atlanta and just moved to the town, and she's newer to the school, so she kind of just met Shelby and is just now getting to understand everything that kind of happened. Nell gets up and gets in his way and starts dancing. And then this guy, Mason, who starts off like a little portrayed as dumb, but is actually this really emotionally intelligent guy and is kind of learning, like, the ropes of feminism himself, like, gets up and is, like, dancing in support of them. And at one point, Shelby ends up on the teacher's desk and Mr. Smith tries to go for her again, and Mrs. Gallagher, like, steps in his way and is like, back the F off. It was so cool because literally every time someone stood up to dance, people were cheering. And so then the show ends with the dance because Beth stands up and it looks like she's about to join in, and it just goes to a blackout, and that's the end of the show. So there were a few specific things I wanted to hit with this show. I just think the implementation of talking about the Me Too movement and kind of the perception of feminism as a whole was really, really important because Me Too is something that's newer and scary to speak about, kind of, because, like, you never know how it's going to be perceived. Some people view Me Too as, like, quote-unquote a witch hunt, like the Crucible, which is so sad because, like, what people should just be able to speak about the things that have happened to them and not be villainized for it. But there also is this perception, not from everyone, but there is a lot of people who perceive that, like, feminism is this bad thing because somehow being feminist is wanting to put men down. And there is the unfortunate truth that for women to gain equal rights, men do technically have to lose something because they have to lose power. And so feminism is often viewed as this, like, bad thing. Like, it's bad to be a feminist sometimes, which is crazy. So I'm really, really glad that the play delved into that. Because especially as, like, a young adult girl, like, there is that grappling with, like, I want to be a feminist, but sometimes it's hard to feel like you want to be a feminist when there's all these negative connotations linked with it sometimes. Or there's some people that take it too far. And so, yeah, I really loved kind of the reevaluation of the Crucible because this is something that happens with older plays a lot. My acting class just read The Glass Menagerie by Tennessee Williams. There was a questioning tone there, but it is Tennessee Williams. So, in The Glass Menagerie, quick synopsis of that for people that don't know it. It is a pretty good play. I would read it. I did read it, but y'all should read it if you don't have any familiarity with it. It follows Tom, his sister Laura, and their mom Amanda. And Tom's an adult working at this factory. Laura is this very shy, underconfident, anxious girl. And Amanda kind of wants to live vicariously through Laura because she's unhappy with where her life left her. And so Tom ends up bringing a male suitor by the house from, like, low-key, after some low-key harassment from Amanda. And it's this guy, Jim O'Connor. And at the time the play first was out, Jim O'Connor was seen as this amazing, like, almost savior-type guy. He was seen as, like, the hero of the play. JC, his initials were, like, Jesus Christ the Savior. But he's kind of problematic, and now that the play's gotten older, a lot of people are starting to kind of notice that. Because, yes, he helps Laura become more confident, and he kind of, like, instills some of this confidence in her that she needs. But he also kind of leads her on a little bit because they're like, it seems like they're flirting and he like gets up and dances with her at one point and then he kisses her and then he's like, oh shoot, I shouldn't have done that, I have a fiance. So that's definitely like a little problematic of him because bro should not have been kissing another girl and kind of like making her think she had a chance with him. Anyway, I just loved that because it applied to something that I worked on my acting class that same week, so I found that really, really cool. I wanted to talk about the ending of the show and the implementation of the song Greenlight by Lorde in the end, because I'd heard this song before, because, like, I obviously this song was huge when it came out, but I'd never really listened to the words. And so it was just amazing that they found this song that, like, people know and love that really is about sexual assault going through it. Because earlier in the analysis with The Great Gatsby, they're like, oh, maybe it's, like, Gatsby's green light that it's, like, hoping this light gets left on by your ex. But then they do this dance at the end, and it's like, oh my god, wait. Some of the lyrics are that in the first verse, it's, I know what you did and I want to scream the truth. She thinks you love the beach, but you're a damn liar. And then the refrain is, well, those great whites, they have big teeth, as in, like, telling, like, these big, like, white lies and, like, lying about, like, what you've done. And it's really, like, but I hear sounds in my mind, but honey, I'll be seeing you everywhere I go. But honey, I'll be seeing you down every road. I'm waiting for it, that green light, I want it. So it's this, it really is this beautiful song about, like, when am I allowed to pick up and move on from my trauma? And when am I able to move on with my life? And move on and heal. And like the second half of the chorus is, because honey, I'll come get my things, but I can't let go, I'm waiting for it, that green light, I want it. Oh, I wish I could get my things and just let go, I'm waiting for it, that green light, I want it. So it's really beautiful hearing this song that you've heard before and like kind of having the context finally hit you. Also, oh my god, Sadie Sink is phenomenal for this. I know she didn't choreograph it, but like she executes it so perfectly. There's a part of the play where they talk about kind of the physical fits that some of the girls would have that would be, like, proof of witchcraft. And in the show, her character Shelby Holcomb, sorry for that blunder of mispronunciation, mentions how it could be PTSD and a trauma response because a lot of girls in that time period were actually sexually assaulted. And so maybe these physical fits of witchcraft were actually just PTSD responses. And so there's one point of the green light dance where she's literally, like, kneeling front and center stage. And it looks like one, like, how those physical fits are described. Like, she's physically doing that with her body to the music. And it's just such a chilling moment. Because it really, this whole play does such a good job taking a play that was written in like the 1950s and showing how it's still prevalent and important to today's world, with a lot of themes that the play itself actually doesn't outwardly outright show. And so John Proctor is the villain. I'm obsessed with it. One of the best plays I've ever experienced. I think everybody needs to watch it, read it, something. And yeah, so let's move on to our last play. All right, so the last play I wanted to talk about is All Nighter by Natalie Margolin. This is an off-Broadway limited engagement run show, and I am so, so beyond thankful that I got to see it. Thank you today, Tix, for putting tickets on sale. So All Nighter follows a group of college girls who are pulling their last all-nighter in the library before they graduate. The four of them are all roommates, and then there's this fifth girl, Wilma, who kind of pops in and out. She's like this kooky comedic relief character played by Julia Lester, who does a fabulous job. She was so entertaining and so funny. And so throughout the show, there's all of this different drama that's A, either coming to light, or B, getting rehashed up. How the trigger warning topic of sexual assault comes up a little bit is because two of the characters, Lizzie and Jacqueline, both got sexually assaulted freshman year of high school, but Lizzie is still hooking up with the guy as a senior that sexually assaulted her on and off. And Jacqueline has this conversation with her and is pretty much like, hey, like, why are you doing that? Like, that's unhealthy. You are being self-destructive right now. I'm saying this because I care for you and I love you. There's a plot where Tessa's credit card got stolen, one of the other girls, and there's all of these like insane charges being charged to it from all of her favorite stores. And we find out at the end that the one roommate, Darcy, is like a compulsive liar and has literally been sitting with the girls all night online shopping with Tessa's credit card. And so at the end of the play, they're like, Darcy, get the hell out, get out, go, leave. And it's getting rehashed because there was a point where Jacqueline was mad at Lizzie for something and was like, I hate her, and Lizzie overheard it. And then Jacqueline is mad at Tessa because the night before, Tessa kissed Jacqueline's girlfriend and is refusing to kind of come clean about it and acting like it didn't happen. And then Tessa's just mad about, like, her credit card overall. And then Jacqueline's like, maybe we should handle this with some empathy and understanding. And Tessa's like, why would we do that? I have no empathy right now. And then Jacqueline's like, well, I had empathy for you, knowing that you kissed my girlfriend last night and you've been sitting here lying to me all night. And I forgave you and said it was okay because we love each other. And that's what you do with people you love. And there's this really beautiful line that Tessa has that pretty much the gist of it is like, well, maybe we need to take another look at how we love each other then, because this isn't right. I really loved that. I think it's such an important theme to have in this play of kind of finding the relationships in life that serve us and really taking the look at the difference between a relationship that's healthy and good for a person to be in versus saying, well, this is the way it's always been, so it's okay for the relationship to keep developing like this. There's also this really important, beautiful theme of how do we accept the love that we deserve? Because none of these girls are doing that. Lizzie's hooking up with a guy who took advantage of her because she finds it easier to rationalize things that way. Jacqueline's staying with a girlfriend who made out with one of her friends the night before. Darcy's lying to all of her friends and doing these things to hurt her. And when other people try to call it out, they kind of just sweep it under the rug. And I think that honestly is such an important theme for teenagers in general to have, because through high school and college is like where you're kind of finding your people and finding what relationships do and don't serve you. It's also where a lot of drama happens, and there is a huge tendency to stay despite drama, despite being hurt, because you just don't always know where else to go. And so I think that's such a beautiful and prevalent theme to really be seeking out and finding that love we deserve in life, and how do I let myself accept the love that I actually should have in my life. So I just thought that was so, so beautiful. Please run to see All Nighter before it closes. It was such a phenomenal show. I would go back in a heartbeat. And yeah. So now that I've gotten through all three of the shows, I just wanted to take a second to highlight how wonderful I think it is that we're kind of in this theater renaissance of trying to target more theater towards Gen Z. Teeth technically isn't categorized in that, but I love Teeth, and so I want it to be categorized in that. And I do think it's like such an important show also for young people to see. But I really, really love that theater is starting to reach out to this younger generation because, like, we are the generation that's starting to grow up and come out into the world, and, like, it is important to connect with us. So that's more, I know that's more John Proctor's The Villain, All-Nighter, Romeo and Juliet, which was phenomenal and will be talked about later, has also been kind of clumped into that grouping. I really, really love that Broadway is making the effort to reach out to the younger generation and say that, like, we see you, we want you involved, because that is so important. I love all three of these shows because they don't shy away from taboo subject matter. I am someone who is very scared to discuss things like that sometimes. Like, I've been, like, literally overthinking, second guessing everything I've said in this episode. I've actually recorded it twice now because I'm just so scared of saying something wrong or something that might hit the wrong way or sound the way I don't mean it. And so I just love shows that take this important taboo subject matter and talk about it so unapologetically because that is what we need right now. Teen girls especially need that, I feel like, because all three of these shows really are targeted more to teen girls. And I just love that because I feel like there's so many subjects we're made to feel that we can't talk about or inappropriate to talk about. Keep it to yourself, discuss it behind closed doors. So I love these shows for saying, screw that, this is an important topic, this needs discussed. So yeah, thank you guys so much for joining me, and I'll see you next time.